From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Thursday, June 16th, 2016, and we are so honored that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. Throughout this hour, we've got a hot one in store for all of you out there. We will, of course, give you all a preview of the night's Current Sports TV sit-down with the one, the only assistant coach of the Michigan State hockey team, Mr. Tom Newton. It will be a tribute interview to, of course, the late Ron Mason, whose memorial was taking place right now, the visitation from 11 to 2 p.m. And, of course, the memorial will start at 2 p.m. I'll be heading down to Munn Ice Arena in just a second, but Tom talks very candidly about his friend and mentor, Ron Mason. We will play you a preview of that chat. Also, after our first break, we will invite the director of marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties, Terry Kilday. Terry is going to talk about the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship that will be coming right here to Mid-Michigan next week. You don't want to miss that. And on the back end of the show, it is Thursday. We will hop into our Current Sports time machine and take a look at what exactly happened on this particular date in sports history, all the while taking your calls. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, as aforementioned, the public viewing for Ron Mason, former Michigan State head hockey coach and athletic director, is taking place right now on the campus of Michigan State University at Munn Ice Arena. The public viewing will last until 2 p.m., followed by a memorial service. Parking for the visitation and funeral service will be at Parking Ramp 5, which is located behind the Communication Arts and Sciences Building, with shuttle service to Munn Ice Arena. Shuttles to Munn will start, well, I should say have started, since 10:30 a.m. and will run all the way up until 4 p.m. Keep it locked to WKAR.org later this afternoon as I will be in the house for that memorial service and will bring to you all a touching report. Don't want to miss it, folks. All right, Michigan State University's Board of Trustees on Wednesday unanimously approved a permanent lights agreement for Spartan Stadium. Greg Iani, MSU's deputy athletic director, said the project will cost between $2.2 and $2.5 million. The goal is to get final approval from the board at its September meeting, break ground in December, and have the LED lighting system ready for the Spartans' 2017 football season. Additional revenue from Big Ten television contracts is expected to cover the lighting project's cost, which will come out of the MSU Athletic Department's budget and not general funds. That was stated by president of the university, Luana K. Simon. The Michigan Wolverines made their first 2018 scholarship offer right here in Mid-Michigan to four-star forward Brandon Johns of East Lansing. His coach, Steve Finnemore, tweeted the news, saying that the U of M coaches will get another close look at Johns at the Trojans team camp next week. Quote, University of Michigan has offered Brandon Johns a scholarship. We will be attending their team camp in 10 days. Hashtag East Lansing Trojans. That was from Steve Finnemore's Twitter account, listed at 6'7" and 206 pounds. Johns is ranked as the nation's number 76 player in the 2018 class by 247 Sports and is the top player in the state of Michigan. The Detroit Tigers fell in the rubber match last night against the Chicago White Sox, 5-3, the final of that one. Todd Frazier's sack fly to deep right center snapped a seventh-inning tie and gave the White Sox a 5-3 victory over the Tigers last night at U.S. Cellular Field. The win gave the Southsiders a 10-23 record over their last 33 games after going 23-10 to start the season. Ugh. Chris Sale picked up his Major League best 11th win by allowing 3 runs on 6 hits over 7 innings of work. JV, that's right, Justin Verlander, who is 6-5 on the year, will start the opener of a 4-game series at Kansas City. That's right, the Royals tonight. Now, in his past 7 starts, the righty is 4-2 with a 1.93 ERA. Stan Van Gundy, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, has promoted Bob Beyer to associate head coach. Van Gundy stated, quote, "One of the real motivations for me was I was a little frustrated, to be honest. With all the jobs open and different assistants getting a chance to go interview for jobs and Bob's name hadn't come up. He's been at this a long time. He's very, very good and deserving of looks from people to get a chance at a head job." End quote. Beyer, who is 54 years old, has 4 decades of coaching experience. Draymond Green believes the Golden State Warriors would already have the championship trophy had he not been suspended for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. And he is looking forward to try and make history by winning the title on the Cleveland Cavaliers floor in back-to-back seasons tonight. Quote, "I have a strong belief that if I play in Game 5, we win. But I didn't because I put myself in a situation where I wasn't able to play." Green made that statement after watching the Cavs' 112-97 victory from the OCO Coliseum next to Oracle Arena while serving a suspension. Spain's Pau Gasol says that he will consider freezing a sperm sample because of concerns over the Zika virus if he decides to play in the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Gasol says, quote, "Freezing sperm is one of the measures I have to consider," end quote. The 35-year-old Chicago Bulls center has yet to commit to playing for Spain. And last but not least, folks, the U.S. Open has started today. But, yeah, they tried to get underway in Pennsylvania, but the rain has other plans. A second wave of rainstorms swept across Oakmont Country Club, early in round one, forcing a suspension of play. Surprise leader, get this, Andrew Landry, a web.com tour player, ranked number 624th in the world. Are you kidding me? He was among the few golfers to take advantage of these softer conditions. He was at 3 under, leading 4 others at 2 under. All right, folks, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start the show.
I like the way the game was in terms of when big men were allowed to play the game. I think the way our game has evolved in terms of small ball, it really has eliminated the big man from the game. And it's eliminated the big's power, their strength, the things that made our game unique in terms of seeing big people play the game. I'm afraid right now that our game is evolving to a place where only the small men can play. The pendulum has swung too far,
yes,
in my opinion, to the small men. And at one time in our league, it had swung too far towards the big men. I do think there needs to be some rule changes where we can find a happy medium where big people can play and also small people. Steph Curry is the most valuable player of the league. But when you look at the effect that and the impact that Draymond Green has on that team, he's probably their most valuable player.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports, the only place where you can hear the voice of Isaiah Thomas mixed in with a little MJ. That's right. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. Yes, that was the great Isaiah Thomas, former Detroit Pistons great. He joined Fox Sports this morning. He was a member of The Herd, Colin Cowherd's radio show. And he weighed in on, of course, the NBA Finals, Game 6. Pretty excited about it. Game 6 tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors have, yes, another opportunity to try and close out the series against LeBron James and company. They couldn't do it last game out in Cleveland. Certainly a hostile environment. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving were absolutely stellar. Both throwing up 41 points. But Isaiah weighed in, as you just heard, on the state and future of today's game. Folks, phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Isaiah Thomas believes that the game is certainly changing, and I think anyone can see that. The game is not like it used to be back when Isaiah played in the 80s and early 90s, where ideally your offense ran through your center, your juggernaut. And it allowed, the way the game was played back in the day, it allowed big men to really flourish. But we are seeing a change, folks. If you look at what is taking place in today's National Basketball Association, heck, just look at the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors. The Warriors don't really have a true center, a true dominant center. They don't have a Dwight Howard figure. The Warriors thrive off of guard play. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, who is, Draymond is considered, you know, he's right smack dab in the middle when you talk about what type of player he is. He's a forward with guard tendencies as well. He can stretch the floor because he can hit the three-point ball. He's got a good mid-range game. He can take you off the dribble. He can post you up. Draymond is a jack of all trades. But it's very rare when you look at today's game where you can find a true center, a guy who is just a mammoth down low where the post game is what he does. You know, you see all these hybrid big men in today's game. You know, guys that can take you down low, but hey, they can also hit the jumper. And I do believe that a lot of them think they can hit the jumper. They spend way too much time on the perimeter on the perimeter game. So and you heard Isaiah weigh in on it, and he believes that today's game is putting the big man in the back of the bus, basically. It's a guard-heavy league. We know that. And that's why I believe that when you take a look at the NBA draft, which will be taking place next week on June 23rd, when you take a look at the NBA draft, folks, you are going to see an emphasis placed on big men who are special. You know, if you do have a big man, it's so rare in today's game that respective player's draft stock is more valuable than a guard's in today's game. I must say, and it's part of the reason why I believe a guy like Denzel Valentine, who completely balled out for the Michigan State men's basketball team last year, who was an umpteen National Player of the Year award winner. But it's the reason why Deontay Davis, who was a freshie last season, who had a solid year. Deontay Davis was exceptional in some games, but he lacked consistency, and he lacked overall ability to retain information quickly in a timeout and to go out there and execute it. I do believe that Deontay Davis, he needed some more time at the college level in order to hone the game from an X's and O's standpoint and also develop more of an arsenal down low. But there's such an emphasis on big men that when you do have a guy like Deontay Davis whose ceiling is so high, you take him over a guard. That's why Deontay Davis, I believe, is going to be taken before Denzel Valentine in this year's NBA draft. So, and I see where Isaiah is going. The question here is whether or not it's healthy for the game. Because I must say, today's youth, when you turn on the television and you see what the Warriors do and how they play, they hoist up a ton of three-pointers. But again, we're talking about Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, who, when they are said and done, when their careers are said and done, they will go down as the best shooting backcourt in NBA history. These are exceptional shooters. But, you know, it's crazy because I go to local games and, you know, I see certain individuals and I play pickup ball and I see those that I play pickup ball with fall so in love with the three ball. You know, when you look at the NBA is on the grandest stage of hoops. These are the best of the best in the world. And kids, when you want to emulate their idols that they see on television in the National Basketball Association. So much so that, you know, I believe the last time I played pickup ball at a rec center, back in Novi, Michigan, I saw countless kids just coming down, not even passing the ball or trying to get off a good shot. I saw countless kids just come down and just hoist up a horrible three. Horrible three that 9 times out of 10 clanked off the back of the iron. So I see where Isaiah is going. I think the game is purer when you work through a big man because I think more guys get touches. I do believe that. Because when you work inside out rather than outside in, you got to make sure. In order to get a good solid look inside the paint, you got to have ball movement. Because the paint is so crowded at times whenever you're going on a drive or whenever you're dumping it down there that you have to set that play up. When it comes to the perimeter game, you can take a bad three-pointer anywhere. It's very rare when you have an individual down low that takes a point-blank layup in the paint. It's very rare when that is a horrible shot. But in order to get off a good shot down there, you got to have good ball movement. I think the game's pure in that regard. But when you look at the Warriors and look at the talent on that team, it's very hard to argue with what they do. It works for them because they have the player personnel that can pull that type of play off. As far as the rest of the basketball world, I have a side eye, I must say. So, folks, what do you think about Isaiah's notion here? And also, at the very end of that spiel from Isaiah, he went on to say that he believes that Draymond Green is the most valuable player on the Golden State Warriors roster. And I must say, he does have a point. And I must say, I do agree with Isaiah Thomas when having this argument. You saw what happened in Game 5 due to Draymond's absence. I felt as though if now, again, I don't think the Warriors would have won that game. I'm standing behind that. But you can possibly make the argument that it would have been a closer game if Draymond Green would have played. I think you can make that argument, especially from a defensive standpoint. Again, I mentioned how Draymond Green, you know, when the Cavaliers love to run that high screen, Draymond Green is a very good help defender. Very good help defender. I saw guys like Livingston. I saw guys like Festus Ezeli. I saw guys like Mo Spates. Just give Irving or LeBron a wide open jumper coming off the hedge. I thought Draymond Green, could have helped in that regard. Would they have won the game? No, I still don't think. You know, you look at the performance of LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. I'm not going that far. But hey, the Warriors lost without Draymond Green. Without Steph Curry, we saw Steph get injured very early in this year's NBA playoffs. You can go to that Houston Rockets series. And the Warriors still were able to pull out that series quite handily. They don't collapse when Steph Curry is out the game. And I think a lot of it has to do with you got a player that it's sort of like a quasi-Steph Curry as far as from a shooting perspective, and Klay Thompson that can shoulder a lot of that load. Klay Thompson has been great. Klay Thompson has been so consistent in this series. And then you can have the other conversation of who's going to be, if the Warriors close it out tonight, who's going to be your finals MVP? For me, I think you can make an argument. I think Klay Thompson may be leading that charge right now. I don't think, now, if Draymond Green comes out and has just a remarkable game, a double-double, and he's everywhere, you can make a case for Draymond Green. But if Klay Thompson, if he's lights out as well, he's been the most consistent player in my eyes. I think you have to give it to Klay Thompson, but you can go tit for tat with that. But I must agree with Isaiah when having this conversation. I think that Draymond Green is more valuable because of what he gives you on both sides of the basketball. I have to say that. And he can guard multiple positions. His game is so unique because he is a quote-unquote big man, if you want to put it that way. He's a forward, ideally, but he plays like a guard. He can push the ball up the court. He can push it out on fast breaks. He can hit the outside jumper. He's just a unique player. So I hear where Isaiah is going with that. Before we move on here and give you guys another Ron Mason tribute, again, we're going to give you guys a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with the assistant coach for the Michigan State hockey team, Mr. Tom Newton. Actually, the longest tenured assistant coach, college hockey coach, I should say, in the nation, Tom Newton. He's going to join us. He was actually recruited by Ron Mason back in the Dizay. And it's just a tough week for him, just like many out there. So I'm going to give you guys a preview of my sit-down with Tom. It was certainly an emotional one. But before we do that, really briefly, I want to get your thoughts on Isaiah Thomas's comments, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. What did you think about his comments this morning?
Yeah, I agree with them, quite frankly. I think that the game has in some ways been degraded by not having that presence of the big man in the game anymore. When I grew up, it was Allen Iverson and Shaquille O'Neal. Those were the two guys who I really remember going head-to-head in the first ever finals that I watched. And, you know, you just don't have a big man like that anymore. I always track back to Dwight Howard's supremacy in around the 2007-2008 years when he actually led his team almost solo handedly, one handedly, to the NBA Finals. He was just as good as anybody on the planet at that point, and obviously that hasn't been the case since. And part of that's because of the transition of the game, I agree. And I agree that I'm not sure if it makes the game quite as appealing. The NBA has never been a game which gives the shot to the average guy. I mean, you could blame it for that. You could say that's a fault of the game. But at the same time, I like seeing these mammoth 7-foot human beings banging in the post. And then at the same time, seeing guards on the other end who are 6-foot slice and dice through them. I think it's a cool little contrast. And I think the game is missing it in some ways. It's almost been normalized. So I think it's not great for the game. As for the Steph Curry or Draymond Green being the most valuable player on that team, I gotta give it to Steph. I agree that you can replace some of Steph's production with Klay Thompson, but I'm not so sure about Steph not being as valuable as Draymond Green just because he's been out a game or two and they still won those. That was early rounds of the playoffs.
Well, again, you have Klay Thompson to back up Steph Curry. Again, when you talk about value here, if you take that player away, does this team collapse? You take Steph Curry away, the team does not collapse. Draymond Green has notoriously been known as the heart and soul of this Golden State Warriors dating back to last year when they won the NBA championship for the first time. And when you take away a guy like that, who's an emotional leader, who's your vocal leader, and you look at what he brings, again, defensively and offensively, there's no other guy that can replace that when it comes to Steph Curry. And by the way, Steph Curry has not had an off-the-charts NBA Finals. Let's be real here, folks. I mean, you look at last year. He didn't have an off-the-charts NBA Finals last year. Andre Iguodala was actually the Finals MVP last year. I just think that when you take off Steph Curry, his value does not equal that of the loss of a Draymond Green. That's just my thoughts on it. When just evaluating what both bring to the table and how you substitute that loss if one is not out there playing. What do you think, though? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Right now, the visitation for the late Ron Mason is taking place at Munn Ice Arena. Of course, Ron Mason passed away, former Michigan State head hockey coach for 23 years, who went on to become Michigan State's athletic director in the early 2000s. He passed away on Monday, and we have been paying tribute and homage to Mason throughout this week here on Current Sports, and we will continue that tonight at 10:30 on WKAR-TV's Current Sports. You do not want to miss my sit-down with Mr. Tom Newton, folks. It was certainly an emotional one, to say the least, but we love to treat you all, those who tune in to Current Sports every Thursday afternoon. We love to treat you all, our listeners out there, by giving you a preview of that night's Current Sports TV sit-down. And I want to do that right now. Tom Newton, who is at Munn Ice Arena as we speak, preparing for the memorial service, which will be taking place at 2 p.m. at Munn Ice Arena. Tom Newton sat down with me to talk about this very tough topic. It was an emotional one, to say the least. Probably the most emotional sit-down I've ever done. It's a relationship that goes back, it dates back to, the 70s, when Tom was actually, when he was like 13 years old. And I first had to ask Tom Newton how he got the news and what his initial reaction was to the death of Ron Mason.
I received the news very, very early. Monday morning, and I got a text from our trainer, Mr. Dave Carrier, and he said in the text that Ron had passed that night, and I immediately called him, and I was just shocked, but that's how I found out. That's a tough thing to wake up to when you're getting out of bed and going into the bathroom to start the day like you usually do. You grab your phone and you see that. It kind of puts you on your backside real quick.
It definitely does, Tom. And it's so eerie because last week, as you saw in our intro, we had two heavyweights in the world of sports pass away, Muhammad Ali, Gordie Howe. We had done two tribute shows on Current Sports Radio, Friday's show for Gordie Howe, you were a part of, actually, and we had you via phone on. And I listened to an earlier sports talk show earlier on in that day, and Ron Mason was on locally here talking about the death of Gordie Howe. And, I went back and listened to that interview, and there was nothing that alluded to Ron being in some sort of ill health. This really came out of nowhere.
Absolutely. And having spent a little bit of time in the last 2 days with his daughter Cindy and his wife Marion, they were all together on Sunday night, had a meal together, and were at Cindy's house watching the hockey game. And Ron was pleased that Pittsburgh won. He kind of thought they were the better team and thought they should win. So, went to bed and woke up in the middle of the night. And unfortunately, that's when the heart attack happened.
I got to ask before we proceed. I know you have been directly involved with the funeral arrangements for Ron. How is the family holding up? I can only imagine.
Well, yeah, you're right, Al. I think it's like a lot of us. They're having trouble getting their arms around the whole thing and just realizing that it has actually happened, because he was in such good health and still vibrant. And as I've said to people, he's still active enough that he's crazy enough to go on out and fish in the middle of the ocean by himself.
He used to do that? He used to go out in the middle of the ocean?
Well, not quite the middle, but far enough offshore. Yeah, he's still very active and agile and totally, when you... right with it, and no signs at all. And I think, the family is all together now, and I think that's helping them get through it, the strength they have together. And they'll take a long time to heal, but being together will start that process.
Later on in the interview, we'll bring up, of course, the plans to commemorate the life and legacy of Ron Mason here on the campus of Michigan State. It is open to the public. We'll get to that in just a second. But I first want to talk about your relationship with Coach Mason, which, again, as I stated in my intro, started when you were 13 years old. Can you take us back to that moment?
Yeah, I attended a summer hockey camp. It was called the Canadian National Sports Camp. And my dad was an educator, and he somehow found a brochure about this camp. And he noticed that it was run by three gentlemen that were university coaches, Ron Mason, Brian Gilmore, and Bill Mahoney. And he said, now, these guys know how to teach. And he was obviously an advocate of education and educators, and he was also a coach. So he says, these guys, you know, I want my boys to work with them. So the three of us went off, and that's where we all first met Ron. And we were there for a couple summers, and then those three gentlemen bought that hockey school. And it was then called Huron Hockey School, which was kind of a breaking camp with the, they were the first ones to start to work with pros, and today we'd call them a skill development camp. We just called them a hockey camp back then.
Right.
And I was one of the original camp counselors at there. So that's where Ron and I first got to know each other. I must have appealed to him a little bit as a player, because we stayed in touch and then went through a recruiting process and played for him and ended up working for him.
And what a career Ron Mason had throughout his 36-year coaching span. You were talking about a 1986 NCAA championship, NAIA championship, guided a record 23 teams to the NCAA tourney. 924 wins, which at the time back in 2002 was the most for any head college hockey coach. Now Jerry York, of course, has that record. But how was Mason able to have that type of success at the college level? What separated Mason from the rest of the pack?
Well, I think it was, number one, his ability to teach. He could teach players what they needed to know and what they needed to be able to do to be successful within the talents that they were bringing to the game. He was a great evaluator of talent. He could see a player, watch his game, say, okay, we can work with this. This is what he can do. He'll fit into our system here, and he'll be a good player for us. So he had the ability to put teams together. He had the ability to work with individual players to make them better within his system. And then he had an unbelievable commitment to doing things right. His commitment to excellence was unparalleled.
Tom, you talk about that commitment to excellence. I am still kicking myself that I did not get a chance to meet Ron Mason. But, again, talking to those throughout the week that knew Mason, such as yourself, you constantly hear about how Ron was this uber intense guy who did not want to lose and so competitive. But on the other hand, he was so caring and humble. And you know what? We chatted about this for a brief second before we took the air. That aspect reminds me so much of a current head coach of a certain program here at Michigan State, Mr. Tom Izzo of the MSU men's basketball program, who we just saw. Tom is so intense, but I've seen him, you know, completely drill into a kid and then afterwards pat him on the back and say, all right, how do we get better? Similarities there between the two?
Yeah, I really think that there were a lot of similarities, that they have the ability to push people to the brink, but not over, and do it in a way where you're not going to damage your relationship with that individual. And it's a knack that the great coaches develop, and they both have it. There's no two ways about it. And I think there's a lot of other coaches on our campus. Maybe Mr. Mark D'Antonio has a few of those attributes going for him too.
Very true.
And a lot of other guys too.
Now, do you have a story at all, Tom, that sort of puts in perspective just how competitive Coach Mason was?
I always tell the story about a day. I can't remember what year it was, Al, but we're just in the office, and Ron is at his desk, and he yelled to his longtime assistant, Chris Smith, Chris, check the lotto numbers. And so Chris, of course, got back then. I think she was still going to the paper to check them. And I happened to walk into his office looking for something, do information or whatever. And Chris yelled in, "Ron, you didn't win anything." Oh, well, he goes off about, "How come I don't get to win the lotto? I buy my tickets every..." Like, he expected to win the lotto every week. And if he was in the game, he was in there to win. That's just the way it was going to be. And if he didn't get his way, he didn't like it.
Even when it comes to the lottery, I mean, you were chatting, Tom. I mean, you're more likely to be struck by lightning walking outside than to win a lottery.
Absolutely. I think the analytics of the whole thing prove that out, yeah.
Oh, that is so true. Man, he will certainly be missed. How did Mason make you a better coach, Tom?
You know what, Ron, when you were one of Ron's assistants, you became his research and development part of his group. So he was always pushing you to try and find new trends, to find new ways to do things. And, you know, if you're on the road, if you got time, you go watch an NHL practice, see what those guys are doing, you know, talk to other coaches. And he really pushed you to try and stay current and find the best way to get things done. The other thing that Ron did for me, and it's just, you couldn't pay money to have this done, but through him, the people that I met and were able to network with through my career it's unbelievable. It's the greatest minds, it's the greatest coaches in the history of the game. And when you can talk to Scotty Bowman, because Ron introduced you to Scotty Bowman, between those guys, there wasn't a lot of hockey that got missed. So it's things like that made you a better coach, those opportunities.
You know, I read an article, Tom, via the Lansing State Journal. Graham Couch wrote a great piece about how the Michigan State hockey program, back when Ron Mason was the head coach, around that time when they won the NCAA championship back in 1986, I mean, you know, from like the mid-80s up until like the early 90s, they were the hottest ticket in town here in East Lansing. Can you just sort of take us back to that time and sort of describe what the buzz around campus was like with Mason and his program?
Well, at that time, I was actually an opponent. I was at Western Michigan, and, you know, George had just come to Michigan State, so football, he was getting that program in place. And they were kind of the rallying point for the entire program at that point in time. Basketball with Judd was kind of in and out, and then, you know, as the hockey team won in 86 and were, you know, lost in the finals in 87 and were, you know, they were a perennial contender right at the top. It was something that the Michigan State athletic community they really wrapped their arms around that. And then, you know, the football program winning a Rose Bowl was a great opportunity. And, you know, I remember Ron, you know, he loved Michigan State's success, that he got to go to the Rose Bowl, and you know that was huge for him and those opportunities. So he was a big part of the success during that time. But he loved it when George and Judd had great success, and the other coaches. He was a team guy all the way through.
Tom, how is his impact felt on the current program today? How in what ways, what tangible ways do you see his impact here in 2016?
Well, I think that because of our staff, we all played for him, and the standard to the commitment of doing things the right way is something that he embedded in all of us. I think that his level of excellence and his work ethic was bestowed upon all of us, and you know, just the name that he established for the program at such a hot, lofty level is there to this day, and something that we work daily to try and achieve.
Tom, I know this is such a tough week for you and many like you that, again, knew Coach Mason. What's the toughest part of this for you?
That's a real good question. I think my answer is I lost a friend, and that's the toughest part. He's a good guy, and he pushed your buttons, and he got you mad sometimes, but after you went through that, you figured, I did that to make me think about something more. So, but the biggest thing is I lost a friend, and that hurts. That hurts.
How do you think Ryan should be remembered?
First of all, he should be remembered as somebody that gave of himself to make other people better. He was a great provider for his family. He played several different roles in our community that helped a lot of different people, just not in athletics and in hockey. His work with the hospitals and things like that was, you know, he did that because he thought it was important that he could help. But, you know, he should be remembered as a good guy because he was one of the boys and a good guy.
Before we get out of here, Tom, I know that, of course, the ceremony Thursday, open to the public. What's planned? Can you give us a preview?
Well, there'll be the doors will open at 11 at Mon Ice Arena with a visitation, allowing people to come through and pay their respects to Coach and to the family. There will be a service that starts at 2 o'clock, also open to the public that will be paying tribute to his life as a coach, administrator, and as a family man. And I think that it'll help us all heal a little bit, just a little bit, though.
Tom Newton, assistant coach for the Michigan State Hockey Program. I know, Tom, this was tough, but we really appreciate your time this week. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Al. Thank you.
Again, that was my chat with Mr. Newton. You can catch it on Current Sports TV tonight at 10:30 p.m. You'll not only get to hear, of course, that interview, but also see footage from the life of Ron Mason. You'll get to hear comments from current head hockey coach Tom Monastis, head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball team, Tom Izzo, and also current Michigan State athletic director Mark Hollis, as they all talk very candidly about what Ron Mason meant to this university. We also pay tribute to Muhammad Ali and Gordie Howe on tonight's episode, as well as Pat O'Keefe, the Grand Ledge baseball head coach who just won his 26th Diamond Classic championship title earlier this month. That and more on Current Sports TV tonight at 10:30 p.m. Let's hit our second break. And when we come back, well, our first break, excuse me, when we come back, we will be chatting with Terry Kilday, Director of Marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties, as a certain course here in Michigan will be playing as host for the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Eagle Eye Golf Club will be the host venue for the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship. How cool is that, right? This is the premier tournament for amateur golf in our state and has been played for 104 years. Past venues have included Oakland Hills, Belvedere, Boyne, Detroit Golf Club, and Egypt Valley, just to name a few. This year will be the first time ever that this event has been held at a public daily fee facility right here in the greater Lansing area. Now, the Golf Association of Michigan administers the tournament. The event runs next week from June 19th through June 25th. The field consists of 162 players who will have competed in qualifying tourneys throughout Michigan to earn the opportunity to play in the championship. Contestants typically range in age from a few high school golfers all the way up to top golfers in their 50s. As you might expect, the majority of the field are collegiate players who reside in Michigan and play for universities from all over the country. right now, joining us on the phone line to talk about this incredible event is Terry Kilday, Director of Marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. Terry, always a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm great, Al. Thank you for asking.
Well, I first want to start by asking you, Terry, how in the world did you all bring this incredible event right here to Mid Michigan?
Well, my brother is a governor and one of the players on the tournament committee, so he was able to get the conversation started about 4 years ago. And from there, we expressed interest to their board and worked out the details, and here we are next week.
Now, I know it's going to be very cool stuff. We'll actually be doing a feature on this event next week on Current Sports TV. And I want to stress the importance of how this event is open to the public. Can you kind of pull up that a little bit?
You're exactly right. Parking's free, admission's free. Public's welcome to walk the golf course, follow the players. You've been out to our course. Our clubhouse has got a nice 12-foot veranda that stretches for about 300 yards, so they can have a great view of holes 18 and 19 without even walking out of the course.
And, you know, when putting together this thing, Terry, how important was it to you all to make this event open to those who live in the area and around it?
Well, extremely so. And one thing, Al, we're one of the really only pure daily fee courses that's been a host for this event ever. It's usually always private clubs or resort courses where they have their lodging and stuff. So what we're trying to do is expose these excellent players to the people of East Lansing and Lansing area and the surrounding area, and really showcase what amateur golf in Michigan is all about.
With you guys being a daily fee facility, when this was proposed to hold this the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship at Eagle Eye Golf Course, was there any hesitation from anybody when having that conversation about you guys being a daily fee facility, Terry?
Well, our owner put me in a room and beat me with a sock full of marbles for a day or two. So, but no, in all respect to the Kessler family, they stood up, and you know, you don't have to do the math too hard with our rates to realize what they're giving up this week, because there's absolutely no public play, and we give the golf course to the Golf Association of Michigan for the entire week. So there's no charge to them, and you know, it's a big commitment, financial commitment on the Kessler family side.
Now, Terry, when evaluating, you know, this event, again, the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship, how important is this event for the players who maybe have aspirations of turning pro one day?
Well, it's definitely a springboard. And if you look at the list of even the last 10 years of players, you'll see that they're playing the web.com tour, the mini tours. And we had nobody crack the PGA Tour in the last 20 years, but it is a big springboard. The college players, it's the heat of competition. It carries over to their next season in the fall, I think, very well. So extremely important would be the short answer.
Now, you sent an email this morning, Terry, which I perused through, and there's some pretty cool local connections to the state of to the university of you know, Michigan State University here. And I want to list off a few names from those who are associated with the university that will be competing next week. Dan Ellis, MSU assistant coach; Casey Lubon, MSU head coach; Carson Castellani, past MSU golf team captain; Sam Weatherhead, current MSU golf team member; and AJ Vicarios, current MSU golf team member. You know, that's got to be pretty cool when you have, you know, this event taking place right here close to East Lansing, Michigan, and members, you know, current and past members of the Michigan State golf team. That's got to be pretty cool, Terry.
Oh, it really is. And we have a close association with Casey and his team. They do a lot of practice rounds out here. You know, it's going to be a home game for them. And I'd be real surprised if one of those five names doesn't make it to the 316.
And that has to do a lot with just familiarity with the course. I know, you know, a lot of them, if not all, have played on Eagle Eye before.
Oh, definitely. So not just once before. Any of those five names have probably played close to 100 rounds here. So it's a true home game, like I say.
Yes, certainly. Talk about home court advantage, right? Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Terry Kilday, Director of Marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. Now, to talk about the course specifically here, Terry, are you all doing anything differently to the course at Eagle Eye in order to prepare for this championship that will be taking place next week? Any tweaks?
Well, Al, you played here. We don't have to grow our rough any to be what it needs to be. So that's there. It won't be any shorter. The green speed will probably be about two numbers more that you would typically play if you were just here for a daily round. So, and they're pretty quick in those daily rounds. So we'll go up a couple numbers. We did revamp hole number 15 specifically for the championship. We did a little bit of tweaking to hole number 3, probably not even noticeable to most people, but it helped the visualization there, a little bit of the green and flagstick. And then the GAM will work with me and my brother and obviously our superintendent and our head pro, Eric Fink, and we'll choose different yardages for based on where the wind may be blowing. We'll be close to tipped out here, which is 7,300 yards, but they'll probably, for the first 2 days of stroke play, they may cut it back to more like 7,125 or something about like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we're really looking forward to seeing what you guys have done. Again, nothing crazy, but again, you know, the course is absolutely beautiful out there. It's a real tough course already the way it is, I tell you that, Terry. Now, is this the biggest event that you all have hosted at, you know, at Eagle Eye?
Well, Al, before you were in town, we had the PGA Championship, Michigan PGA Championship, for 5 years. And so you had the top professionals from around the state. I'd say one is real close to the other, and had about the same number of participants both times, 160 for the PGA Championship, and there's 162 that will tee it up Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon here. So, equal footing, one on the amateur side, one on the pro side.
Certainly not. Can this be something that's held regularly here in Michigan as you guys evaluate how this first time goes next week?
Well, that's the beauty of the AM in my estimation. And if you look in, your listeners can get a program here at the course when they come out, but it moves around the state. For the last 30 years, it's moved each year. Before that, they went about 20 years where it was always at Charlevoix at Belvedere. And I think, you know, it's not quite fair to the players when you stop and think about a college player on a budget and bringing a caddy. You know, they have to walk the course for all rounds. Mm-hmm. And they're here. It just became so expensive up north. And that's a little bit of the beauty of East Lansing. You know, most of these players will be no more than a 60 to 90 minute ride back home. A lot of them will stay in hotels here. They're part of the area, and that's a boon. But, you know, the ones that are really on a tight budget can drive back and forth.
Certainly. Now, for you, Terry, how has the planning for this event been for you? Has it been stressful, or have you enjoyed it?
Well, I think you're going to enjoy stuff that's stressful, number one. So, yes to both.
That was a great answer, Terry. All right, my man. Well, again, folks, for our listeners out there, go out and check out the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship. It will be held next week from June 19th through the 25th. The field consists of 162 players. For you, Terry, are you predicting any wins here? Who do you think is going to finish out as top dog if you had to throw out a prediction?
Well, you know, I wouldn't put it past Sam Weatherhead from MSU, but I just will couch that comment with the thing that the vagaries of match play are so, you know, things can turn in a match so easily. And those first 2 days are stroke play. So to get that field of 162 to cut to 64. Mm-hmm. And then from there you have like the NCAA bracket, you know, the Spartans got beat on a rough one here starting the basketball championship. And that's what can happen in match play. You know, the guy who qualified number 64 can knock out the guy who qualified number one. And it's a survival because they play six matches after they get to that final 64 number.
And I think that makes it even more entertaining, especially as the tournament prolongs. I absolutely love that idea, Terry. All right. Well, again, and also, we mentioned in our quick hit headliners, Terry, how the U.S. Open, tried to get underway in Pennsylvania today. The rain had other plans. A second wave of rainstorm swept across Oakmont Country Club early in round one. But right now, Andrew Landry, a web.com tour player ranked number 624 in the world, among the few golfers to take advantage of the softer conditions. He was at 3 under, leading 4 others at 2 under. How surprising was that today?
I did look, because that name meant nothing to me. I looked at his bio on there, line and stuff. But I tell you, Al, from the times I've looked at Opens, that first day and even sometimes the second day, there's some names that we just don't know. But they tend to fade on the weekend. So I hope, for him, I hope he has a great tournament. But, boy, as the stress builds there, some of that stress is not happy stress. And I'd be surprised if we see that name on the leaderboard come Saturday.
I think you and the rest of the golf world, right, Terry? All right, well, let's get you out of here again, folks. Check it out next week, the 2016 Michigan Amateur Golf Championship. Terry Kilday, Director of Marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. Terry, always a pleasure chatting with you.
Al, thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you out here at the course soon.
You got it. Counting down the days. All right. All right. Well, less than 5 minutes left here in the show, and we love to close out each and every Thursday edition of Current Sports by hopping into our Current Sports time machine and taking a look at what exactly happened on this particular date in sports history.
That the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Goal! And there it goes! You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks, it is time for Throwback Thursday. So let's take a look at what happened on this particular date. It is June 16th. On this day, back in 1883, the New York Giants baseball team admitted all ladies for free to the ballpark. It was the first Ladies' Day. How about that? Look at the Giants getting ahead of the curve right there. All right, 1938, Jimmy Fox of the Boston Red Sox, he set a major league record when he was walked 6 times in one game. In 1951, Ben Hogan won the U.S. Open for the second straight year. That's a rarity. In 1969, U.S. President Nixon sent a telegram to Reggie Jackson thanking him for hitting 2 home runs while he was in the park on June 11th. In 1975, the Milwaukee Bucks traded Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to the Los Angeles Lakers, thus ideally starting Showtime. Gotta love that. In 1981, the Chicago Tribune purchased the Chicago Cubs baseball team from the P.K. Wrigley Chewing Gum Company for $20.5 million. In 1985, Willie Banks broke the world record for the triple jump with a leap of 58 feet, 11 and a half inches in the USA Championships in Indianapolis, Indiana. In 1991, Otis Nixon of the Montreal Expos broke a major league record with 6 stolen bases in 1 game. Yeah, Nixon was quick, folks. In 1993, Michael Jordan of the Chicago Bulls scored 55 points in an NBA Finals game against the Phoenix Suns. Jordan became the first player to score 50 points in a Finals game since Jerry West did so in 1969. And in 2005, the NHL Board of Governors approved the sale of the Disney-owned Mighty Ducks of Anaheim to Henry and Susan Samueli. That wraps up your Throwback Thursday moments for this June 16th. And we are now out of time. Thanks so much to Terry Kilday, Director of Hawk Hollow Golf Properties, for joining me on today's show. Also, catch Current Sports TV, on tonight at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV as I chat with Tom Newton. You got a preview today, but catch the visual of that tonight. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.